Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back for another hour or so about the sometimes murky, sometimes quirky, always passionate world of non-league. Unfortunately, traffic got the better of us this week, and I'm here alone in the studio without Dave Anderson, but hopefully he'll be back next week. He's working on the first couple of episodes of The Gaffer, so our very own management guru will be back with his own podcast very, very soon. In the meantime, plenty of guests, interesting both from within the dugout and behind the scenes at football clubs, so let's get matters underway. So let's start this week with a club used to success in the lower reaches of the pyramid and who in recent years have stepped up and are keen to keep making more steps up too. Currently top of the Northern Premier League, this week they announced a plan to raise £1 million via a new shareholder scheme with the ultimate aim of helping the club push on into the Football League. An ambitious plan, but one that appears to be fully considered and indeed well documented, as I hope Jeff Thompson, chairman at South Shields FC, can confirm. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Jeff.
Thank you. Yeah, delighted to be here. Thanks for your interest.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you guys on, because obviously it's been a successful few years. I'd say well documented, this shareholder scheme. It's not just another non-league board that we get week in, week out, tossing around dreams out there. That you've actually teamed up with one of the leading business investment platforms, Cedars. You're doing this properly. It's formal. It's hopefully... Yep. It's going to be more success than probably 90% of the other clubs out there that stake claims for a rise up of non-league. How did it all come about?
Well, I've always said from the outset that the club needs to be a community-led and community-owned football club. Of course, right at the very beginning when I was involved sort of 4.5 years back, it would have been premature to sort of launch anything like this, because we had to do some work to makes a series of investments in order to just get the club started and move it through the leagues as we have done over recent years. So what I would say is that, timing is everything in life. And I think, the club's now at a kind of important stage of its evolution and development. You've just touched on how thorough we're being. And I would stress, and I'm glad you raised it, because we have got a very detailed financial plan that looks forward over the next 5 years. And by the way, that's not something you kind of dream up in 5 minutes. It's a very detailed kind of modelling exercise, so we understand all of our revenue and cost drivers, and we've taken a prudent view of what needs to happen over the next 5 years with some reasonable assumptions about promotion. So the first thing I'd say is, it's numbers driven, it's very detailed financial modelling. But also, I'd say that structurally, we've gone through a lot of change, because we've got to create a new holding company, which we're just finalising now. And then sitting underneath the holding company are the operating company, the club, a separate sort of freehold or stadium company. And then thirdly, a kind of development company, which is an SPV for the proposed redevelopment of the ground and some property development. So without boring you with too much detail, what I'm trying to stress is, yes, it's very detailed. Yes, it's numbers driven. We've gone through some restructuring. There's a lot of legal, accounting and tax work that's had to go on in the background. And the reason for all of that is that what we end up with is a structure that fans can genuinely commit to and can sort of fund, i.e., they're protected, they've got minority protections, we've got the right shareholders agreements, the right governance, if you like. So there's a lot of detail there, and sorry for a very long-winded answer. And what I would say is that using the Cedar platform, we've just launched a kind of pre-marketing stage now with Cedar. And the next step is to prepare a much more detailed prospectus where the fans and indeed the wider investment community can have a look at us and decide whether we're a good investment opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, for those that don't know Cedars, it's I guess it's kind of a crowdfunding, but it's equity crowdfunding, that it's, which means it's regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. It's
absolutely
a proper investment opportunity, and I sort of deal with this away from my world of non-league. These are the sort of things I get involved in, but their tagline, because I've dealt with these boys in the past, is we enable all types of investors to invest in businesses they believe in and share in their success. It's almost written for non-league clubs.
It is. Although, as I've stressed, there's a lot of work to be done to even get yourself to the point where it's a credible option. And I'm glad you've commented on the sort of whole FCA approval process. You know, we have to work very closely with CEDA over the coming months. So as we prepare the prospectus and the detailed documentation, and, you know, we start to go out to fans and to potential investors more detail, you know, we've got to make sure that we're fully compliant and that we are delivering a very accurate assessment of the investment opportunity and indeed the risks therein.
Now, I mentioned the ultimate aim is to bring Football League back to South Shields. And, of course, there was a previous club by the name of South Shields applying their trade against, well, Man United, etc., on South Tyne Times. What was that? Back in the 1920s, I think. Last year, we saw like problems with like near neighbours Gateshead last season. Can the area sustain clubs moving up the pyramid even further?
Well, it's a good question, but what my response to that is, if you look at the population of South Shields, it's approaching 80,000. The population of South Tyneside are over 150,000. You know, we want to be that sort of next-tier club, all right? We've got big neighbours like Newcastle United and Sunderland and a little further afield, Middlesbrough. But there is absolutely no reason, with the size of our conurbation and indeed the history of the club, the appetite of the fans, that there's absolutely no reason why we can't get back to the Football League and have a sustainable model where, you know, we going back to my financial modelling that I've referred to, you know, we know what kind of gates we need in order to support the club and make it sustainable. And they are very, very achievable given the conurbation that I've just touched on. And, you know, our fans are already getting behind it. You know, if you look at our average gates over recent years, you know, we are considerably higher than others at our level of football. And I think that's just the beginning. What we've got to do is reinvest in the infrastructure. So one of our plans is to install a new stand with just on 1,000 seats, to invest in our academy and our academy building and community facilities. So all of these things are part of a development plan that makes the whole fans' experience much more positive, as well as, of course, playing good football and hopefully succeeding on the pitch. But it's about, you know, that kind of momentum of making sure that the infrastructure can support that success, and that's what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and it's that thing that I'm constantly on about on the Non-League Football Show, about we are non-league clubs and we are important to the fans, but the clubs, to sustain, need to be run as businesses, and that needs to look beyond just the football that we go and watch every other week on a Saturday.
Yeah, although, you know, it's not easy, and I'm not trying to be a smart aleck in any sense. You know, I've had to invest monies personally to get the club to the stage it's at now. I believe in the long run, that's a good investment. And, you know, I'm a South Shields lad by birth and by sort of pedigree, if you like. So I was quite happy to make that investment. So what I'm saying is that, you know, there is a bit of a catalyst that's needed in order to get any non-league club to a position where this kind of option is viable. And it's not an easy transition to make. So I'm not suggesting that it's right for everybody and it is extremely difficult. But I think we are making that transition. We're at a key stage now in our development, and I think we've got an incredibly positive future ahead of us. You know, it's not easy, but, you know, we're very positive about the outlook. I mean, as an example of that, you know, we just launched the platform, or the kind of pre-marketing element of this offer, so there's no detail yet, but, you know, we've already had well over 500 fans register to become shareholders, so it's a phenomenal response in a very short space of time.
And I'm looking, yeah, at the things that you have put out there already. You're saying that you're looking to become a Football League ready club by 2023. Now, obviously, yeah, this season's already, you know, almost behind us before we've even got started. So I guess Football League ready, you're talking about the infrastructure both on and off the field, and then
Absolutely. Hopefully
that can then leverage the promotions that we know are so almost, you know, so difficult to come by.
Yeah, absolutely. And therein lies the challenge. You know, it's not just about, you know, well, clearly you do need first team performance and success on the pitch. But in parallel, you know, you've got to make the right investments. And I'm sure everybody listening to you and to us or anybody involved in non-league, I'm really stating the bloody obvious, pardon my language, but, you know, that is the case. You know, it's a difficult kind of multifaceted problem because you've got to try and invest at an appropriate time and slightly ahead of the curve in order to make sure that as you are successful on the pitch, you're ready with your infrastructure to support those promotions that hopefully will come. And as a practical example, you know, I've mentioned the new stand that we're hoping to build, the investment in our academy and in our community facilities. You know, all of those are prerequisites because, you know, to get the Football League, there's clearly a very clear ground grading requirement. And, you know, we have a master plan that will allow us to get to that stage, but we're trying to do it sensibly and kind of incrementally as success on the pitch hopefully dictates. Mm.
Yeah, well, I mean, nobody can deny you haven't performed to your aims in the past. You become chairman in 2015, I believe, you know, something like three yep. promotions, the FA Vars win, I remember seeing, and you're currently top of the Northern Premier League. What's been the magic spark to make South Shields you know, come to life again as a football club?
Well, that's a very good question. I think there's a number of things I'd say. Firstly, I mentioned the fans and the sort of the heritage of the town and the club, you know, that is an important factor. I think there was an appetite for some success. I think, secondly, it's true in any walk of life or in any business, you've got to get the right people around you. So whilst I end up being the figurehead, the truth is I've got an absolutely fantastic team of people around me. Keith Finnegan, who's our chief exec, obviously the two joint managers, Lee and Graham, the lads who are running the academy, that, you know, the list goes on. There's a good team of people around me, and that's obviously critical. You know, you've got to have everybody focused on the right, well, on the same objective and on the right objective. So I think, you know, I can't preach about what is the right formula, but just to say there are some obvious prerequisites. As I say, the sort of circumstance of the town at the time when we moved the club back to South Shields in 2015. Secondly, as I say, creating the right team of people around you. And then I think thirdly, just trying to incrementally invest in both the club, the first team, but also the infrastructure so that, you know, you get a bit of momentum behind it. And again, you know, I'll be honest and say when I first got involved, my primary objective was just to get the club back into South Shields because we were playing our football down in Peterlee. And I didn't have necessarily at that time, if I'm honest, a grand plan to return to the Football League. And indeed, had I said that, people would have thought I was smoking something, you know, or that I was arrogant. So, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. We've just gradually tried to improve the club. We've assessed the, you know, not only our performance, but the reaction of our fans and the reaction of our community. And I think we've now got quite a lot of things going on that are very positive. For example, you know, we launched our own academy. We've got our Futures Academy for 11 to 16-year-olds. We've set up our own charitable foundation where we've got over 400 kids involved now in activities and sport and, you know, a real health and well-being agenda for the town. So there's a lot of components to this and thankfully everything's moving in the right direction, but it's not easy.
It's not easy. It's never easy once you're involved in a football club. And once you're involved in a football club, it grabs hold of you, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
It certainly sounds like you've got your organised head on anyway. So at the moment, as you say, people just need to register an interest and you're going to be sending out further details, I believe, in the new year. And I guess that will come with some benefits maybe as a shareholder.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there'll be a ladder of different benefits dependent upon the investment size. And, you know, there's a lot of work going on in the background. For example, I mentioned the structure, the restructuring. We've got to get that right. We're trying to make sure the investment is attractive as a sort of standalone, you know, irrespective of the emotion of a football club investment and becoming a shareholder in a football club. We want to make sure that the investment opportunity stacks up for a more objective person, if you like. So my point there is that, you know, we're doing a lot of work to, as I said, get the structure right, hopefully secure maybe even EIS certification so that the investment has a certain you know, advantage to potential investors. All of that, of course, hasn't been completed yet, and we're talking to HMRC about whether that can be delivered.
But that means that, yeah, as well as South Shields fans, yeah, it could be an investment for non-league fans, people that maybe aren't involved at non-league at the moment. But because you're doing it in the right way as a proper investment vehicle and with all the right paperwork in place, it should mean that rather than, you know, where we reread week in, week out in the non-league paper about another fly-by-night coming in and investing, South Shields is around for, centuries to come.
Yeah, that's the plan, absolutely. And I see this as a first step. You know, the idea is that they'll, you know, I'll dilute and the fans will start to become shareholders and other investors. And then, you know, there's a journey that we're on and we'll have the club, you know, as I said before, properly funded, which it is now. There's no external debt in the club. And indeed, you know, we just get that right momentum and back to all of the numbers that I was alluding to, you know, that financial modelling. We just deliver on those numbers. We've got some prudent assumptions about what has to happen. And I think, you know, we've got a very exciting future ahead. But I stress, you know, that's not arrogance. That's not us trying to be clever. There's a lot of hard work involved. And, you know, with a little bit of luck and an awful lot of hard work, we get to our objectives on the field. And certainly financially, I'm confident that we've got a business model and a proposition that really stacks up and makes sense.
Well, Jeff, thank you for explaining it all. And it made sense to me, and hopefully it made sense of it to everybody else as well. It's been great getting a different insight, you know, from normally talking to managers and players, and also getting people to understand how difficult it is to run a football club. So, Jeff Thompson, best of luck at South Shields for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll speak to either yourself or one of the joint managers up there in the next few months. And thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks again. Thank you.
So to my next guest, a manager no stranger to management and no stranger to the Non-League Football Show. His latest appointment seemed to fall under the radar of many last month, and he's quietly got on with his job and swiftly made an impact, pulling Dartford up the National South table. It's always a pleasure and an honour to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show manager at Dartford FC, Mr. Steve King.
Hello, you okay?
I'm good, Steve. Now, I said your appointment went under the radar, but it was certainly one that I mentioned to one or two as quite a statement of intent from the football club. I mean, you've got the experience and that success on your CV. We all know what the great facilities are there at Dartford, and you've been given a contract there until the end of, is it the 2022 season, which says so much. Can you reveal the short-term and long-term goals you've been set by the board?
Nothing's really been set. Just that, you know, stay in the division, obviously, which is our main number one objective, it was. And then sort of within that period of time, it's more what pressure I put on myself, really, than the football club sort of saying, you have to do this, you have to do that. It's, you know what I'm like, and, you know, I crave success. I'm desperate to be successful. And I'll give everything to be successful. So for me, a successful time for me at Dartford will be, in my opinion, not clubs, is can I get Dartford promoted within my period of time of being at the club?
Yeah, they didn't rush to appoint a candidate there, but I believe there were lots of very highly qualified people that applied for the role. So what do you think gave you the edge?
I think, like you said, there was a lot of, you know, names and a lot of people that had done well and you know, had good careers and that. But I kind of asked them the same question after, to be fair. And I think they just said, your record speaks for itself. You come across well in the process and explained your vision. And, you know, no one can argue what you've achieved in the level that we're playing at.
Yeah, we speak to lots of managers that have always got lots of good ideas, and you know, they promise lots of things. But certainly your record, I mean, says it all. Last season, you got Welling into the playoffs, finished third, and you only just lost out to Woking to gain promotion. And I think I'm right in saying you probably know the National South better than anybody else as a manager. Most successful manager probably in the division. You finished first, I think, second, third, fourth and fifth. And is it six times you've been in the playoffs? You've probably been in the playoffs more times than the playoff trophy itself.
Yeah, no, I'd actually been in the finals three times and qualified another two times, but the facilities wasn't up to standard to be able to play in those finals, so wasn't allowed to take part in those finals back in the day at Lewis. But you know, it's a big challenge. It's a big club. Expectation is high, as in, you know, fans want you to do well. They've been in the National League and as a club, and the club really enjoyed its time in the National League, and I think they were sort of saying that they really want to be in that division. So that's the challenge.
Yeah, and obviously Dartford legend, that legend that is Tony Berman, he was in place as the caretaker until your appointment. Now, I guess you know Tony over the years from, you know, just being involved in football. But going forward, how's that relationship going to work? I guess Tony steps back to his role as director?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I've known Tony a long, long time. Been in, you know, played against him, his teams many a time. Over the years, I remember when Tony was first starting in the Ryman South, you know, he used to make phone calls to me, is there any players that you've got available for loan, anyone you can recommend, things like that. We've had that sort of relationship early. He's a pure football man. Loves Dartford's bits. Had a brilliant record with Dartford, and he wants the best for the football club. And we, you know, we'll work closely, as in we'll have conversations all the time, and he's there for me if I need him. That was paramount, that he wanted to get that across, because he felt that people felt that he would interfere and all that, and he's not like that whatsoever. He knows I'm a manager in my own right, but it's nice to have a football person there to go, you know, to fall back on and to have a chat with, and if I need to have a chat, because it's a lonely place sometimes, football is. When everything's good, it's brilliant. When it's not so good, it's sometimes a difficult place, and to have someone of his standing to be able to have conversations with, and when I need to, is only a good thing.
Yeah, that's an important thing. It's something that Dave Anderson often talks about, that relationship between the board and the manager is so important if you want to go on and have success. Now, I have seen stated on more than one occasion various members of the board stating that the final goal for Dartford is league football. Now, you've seen clubs up and down the country, really, inside and out. How are Dartford placed to make that step up into the Football League?
I'm not so sure I've totally heard that one, that they want Football League, but they definitely want Conference National. Definitely, that's their goal. And anything more would definitely be a bonus. I mean, trying to get out of the National League to the Football League is a huge, huge jump. And it's normally a big financial thing as well. You know, massive clubs in there with huge budgets. So I think the first thing is, can we, like I said, within the two and a bit years I've got, can we get to the National League? That's definitely the aim. And then I think, you know, that we'll sit down then and take stock of everything and decide what we do. We go full-time, we change to full-time, because that's definitely the plan going forward. We are looking to go full-time. But like I say, the one to the next one, we have to worry about that when we can get through the first one.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, your main role there is to be in charge of the first team and move them up the table there. But obviously, Dartford's renowned for its community aspect as well. Is there an element of community focus that's going to be important to your role too?
Oh yeah, definitely. I definitely will play a part in the community. I did it at Lewis. If you remember, I went in at Lewis and I set the community up, and in the schools, all the coaching, everything. I did all that at Lewis, so I'm no stranger to it. It's basically all set up at Dartford already, but I will take a part in that, looking at players for the academy side and things like that going forward. It's important I have an input in that, but I've got a major job on my hands at the present time, you know, rebuilding stuff, and, you know, it is solely sort of first team focused at this present moment, but it will go out to the right. To the wider audience within our football club, but at this present time, I've got to concentrate on getting the first team right.
Yeah, and people probably, they know about the state of the art facilities at Prince's Park, and you've already touched upon that. Yeah, you've got great training facilities. Yeah, great, just a great club. But people forget as well that Dartford's a club with a very long, long history. I think it goes back something like 130 years. Is there a sense of history within the club and when you're, you know, talking to people about what you want to do and where you want to take them?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I've seen some brilliant times, you know, back in the past. And obviously there's been some dark days as well when the club went down and had to reform, you know, not reform, but, you know, go back to lower down the pyramid and work their way back up again. And like you quite rightly said, the facilities are first class. They're brilliant. There's lots of stuff to do off the pitch so that if we can make that transition, everything is in place as well, because you can't just go up on a wing and a prayer. If you go up, you need to be able to sustain that in many aspects. And normally, you know, it will grow legs just through the back of getting promoted, if you were lucky to get promoted. So I think it is a great club. There's a lot of history, like you said. But this is a new chapter for me. It's a new dawn. It's something that, you know, I'm really excited about. And I'm hoping, you know, and praying that within my time there, we can take the club, you know, on minimum one level. And it's obviously always been my personal dream to manage in the Football League.
I said you've already made an impact since your arrival there, but and you've touched upon, you know, maybe going full time in the future. But what other tweaks do you think the club still needs to make to make a challenge for promotion, maybe this season or next?
Oof. This season is a big ask. There's been a lot of change. There's been, you know, a joint managership starting. Then there's been Tony, and who steadied the ship. Then there's myself, and it's, you know, I build good sides, and there is good players here. You know, I need to be able to be in my zone where I'm totally managing the group that I'm really comfortable and happy with. So that's a time thing. I'm learning about players that are already at the club, and a few have surprised me. So I think to talk about promotions and that this year is way off key. You know, I wouldn't even look like that. I just think where we are now, mid-table, I think we are kind of a mid-table side. We win one, we lose one, we draw one, we win two, we lose two. That, I think that's where we are as a group. To get to that next step where you consistently win, draw, lose, win, we're a way off of that at the moment.
And that's refreshing to hear as well. And it is, and that's why it's refreshing that the board have backed you with, you know, nearly 3 years on that contract to see the project through, because we saw this week one manager lasting only one match in the role before he loses his job. So it's nice to know that you've got that backing and you've got a bit of opportunity to build, as we know that you can do. And now, you know, looking ahead as well, you're saying about like putting together runs. You've had important wins at Eastbourne and Hampton, and Hampton in some fine form at the moment. But then the next 3 weeks, I'm looking at your fixture list, some tough games coming up. Maidstone in the league this weekend, then the reverse of that fixture later the following week in the FA Trophy, and then a trip down to Bath, and they're up there challenging at the top. But it's certainly no rest. Have you had a chance to, you know, sort your office out and put your feet under the table and consider everything that's ahead of you?
Good question. Yeah, you know, I've looked at the fixtures, what we got. I think we end up playing Maidstone three times away from home after Saturday. We've got them in the Kent Senior Cup as well as the FA Trophy, and obviously away in the league fixture as well. That's the local derbies put a lot of extra strain on you as a team. Then we've got the two local derbies over the Christmas, Boxing Day, New Year's Day with Welling. And then you look at, we've got Bath, and we've just had Billericay brought forward now as well. There's a hell of a little run there, and that's what I say. I don't think we're at the levels where I'm going, yeah, we win that. We're not there yet. And I always am realistic. I always am. I'd like to think I'm real, as in the fact that, you know, I'm not blind. I think that we're more than capable of beating anybody at the moment. But to be the consistency, you need your squad. I think we're a little bit light in certain areas. We're carrying some major injuries at the moment to four key players that would probably be starters in the group. So when you're losing four starters, and we can't quite replace them at the moment, because obviously players that I've worked with in the past or I'd like to sign or on contract at other places, etc., etc. So that's why I say it's a work in progress. And that's where we're going to be on that ride, and people have to be on that ride and understand that we're going to win some, we're going to lose some, and we're going to draw some. That is a fact.
Well, Steve, it's always insightful talking to you, because, as I said, you know, the world of management has probably changed since the first time we ever spoke considerably. But it's nice to know that you've got the backing and you've got your plan. And hopefully you'll be able to take that forward, and we'll speak to you again soon on the Non-League Football Show.
No problem, anytime. Moro Casino.
America's social casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus. Moto Casino.
America's social casino. Download the Moto Casino app today.
So perhaps when you have a manager like Steve King on the show, it is inevitable that there may be a crossover with one of his former clubs, but it's entirely by chance, because every once in a while a story comes across my desk that you simply can't ignore. We often talk about the need for a club, maybe the supporters, the communities, to bang the drum for non-league football. And my next guest appears to have taken that quite literally. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Kevin Miller, Head of Commercial at Whitehawk FC.
Thank you very much, and a pleasure to be on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, Kevin, because I feel I should have had a drum roll maybe for this. I guess you were probably best placed to tell us about this new initiative. It's team building like no other.
Yeah, we've been speaking to a company that does sort of training for various companies, and they use what's called Tyco drumming. It's those huge, big kettle drums, and they all stand in a line, and they all do the coordination, all that kind of thing. And, good for team building. It's the same sort of thing as bungee jumping, or, you know, looking for a life coach, or, you know, sort of sitting around the table drinking coffee and laminates everywhere and trying to be motivated. So I looked at it. I thought, well, you know, we're trying to generate some interest and some revenue, and it'd be a great occasion to have the drummers here. So let's combine the two. And let's have the Tyco drummers do some learning and team building on the day before a game. And then on the day of the game, come out and practice what they've been taught and do it in front of the crowd, a non-league football crowd. We put it out on Monday, and we've had a fabulous response.
Well, it's a fantastic. It's what you do best, though, Kevin. It's thinking out of the box and bringing that to non-league football. The fact is that you're helping businesses. You're working with a local company. Is it Rhythm Works, who are these drummers behind it? But then you're also helping with the entertainment for the 400, 500 odd that are coming along to the game on a match day.
Yeah, it's win-win. I mean, part of the package that we put together includes that company and whoever that may be. I mean, you know, these are big companies that do a lot of these team building things for their various departments. Not only does it give them the opportunity to, enhance their team building and create something within their own company, but it also gives Whitehall Football Club the opportunity to advertise or to get some of these big companies down towards grassroots football. They can then utilise the money that they spend to actually enhance what they're trying to do here in the football club, and that gives us more opportunities to go and spread that money across the community. So it also is like an introduction to bigger businesses to grassroots football and to non-league football, and to say that this is an incredible part of the English game that needs to be looked after. And so, you know, sometimes these companies don't have that kind of opportunity to get down and within communities in their own areas. So why not come down to Brighton, to East Brighton, and do something with us? You know, it is win-win, and it gives us a bit of a profile as well.
Yeah, and I think the important word there is community, because it's just one of the many initiatives that you're running down there as a club. You're building community and inclusivity as well. I think your tagline says that you're Brighton's second biggest football club, and you're certainly trying to embrace the community around you and also further afield as well. I see the Hawks Heroes documentary is on its release as well. What can you tell us about that? It's a film telling the story of some local lads that have got involved with White Hawk Football Club.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I joined here in July 18, and one of the things that we're there, that I found that there was apart from the fans, that the Ultras doing such an amazing job in creating this inclusive message. One of the things that the club wasn't doing particularly well was engaging with its local community. So we worked with the White Hawk Estate, which is just up the road from East Brighton, and we spoke to a guy called Darren Snow at what's called the Crew Club, which is a youth centre built within the estate, which has done some incredible work. And we got together with a couple of companies, and we created this Hawks in the Community project. And one of the first things we did was to create the Hawks Heroes, based on a kind of Harry's Heroes kind of thing, where we've got 20 guys, sort of young fathers, people that have used to, kids, guys that used to play football when they were younger, have let themselves go, you know, all unfit, put them together for a 10-week program and turn them into a football team, where they can play a local amateur side at the end here at White Hawk Football Club. And on day one, they all started. We got an A-licensed coach to help us to do the fitness campaign. They had a collective weight of something like 285 stone. They're still smokers. They all had kids. And, you know, they hadn't got involved in that kind of team environment for years, all over sort of 30. And, yeah, they lost a collective 8 stone in the 10 weeks. They started a WhatsApp group and started to put pictures of all the healthy food they were beginning to eat. You know, I'm eating tuna, or I'm eating chicken, and I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And that created a sense of, you know, some increased morale and participation. Some started doing part runs, and as they got fitter and fitter, and you know, they got better and better, and they played here after 10 weeks. And although they lost the game, they had a fantastic day. We made it a community day, and inviting all the families down, and you know, we had nearly 300 people here from the local community, and it was superb. But one of the things that came out of it was there was a chap called Adam who on day one was absolutely exhausted, and we did a film documentary. You'll see it at the Rex documentary, which is available on our website. He was feeling really tired, and you know, the other lads were trying to sort of goad him to go to the doctors. And he eventually went after a couple of days, and it was found that he was severely anemic and needed an emergency blood transfusion. And then on more detailed reports, it turned out that he had bowel cancer.
Oh.
And he didn't know. He didn't. Had he not joined the program, he wouldn't have known. And he finished the program. He carried on. He had some, you know, intense chemotherapy, but carried on and, you know, doing the program, and actually played in the game after 10 weeks. And what that meant was that, you know, football clubs need to be more, especially at grassroots level, they need to be more in tune with the community. They need to get their message out, and they need to make the community more a part of the club. Mm. And for us to do this, and for him to, you know, hopefully he's on the road to recovery now, and he's on the right path, but it's like a trickle effect, you know. So if some of those dads had not run around for years, and so their little kids never seen dad run around, let alone in a football kit. And if they're feeling better, then the kids feel better. Mum feels better, that the kids feel better, the parents feel better, and there's suddenly this ripple effect of, you know, people feeling a bit more positive. And that's what grassroots football should really be about. You know, it's there aren't many places now in the 21st century where you get loads of generations in one place to share a social experience. You know, everyone, you could say a retail environment, yes, but not so much in day-to-day life. And so the football club has to be a real part of that community. And, you know, again, it helps the club, because if I can get more people coming to watch the matches and use this match, you know, match day experience at 3 o'clock as a kind of community point where people can catch up and meet up with people and watch a bit of football, but the football doesn't have to be the be all and end all. It can be just about the experience. And then that generates more revenue for the club, which means we can get better players, which means the team plays better, which gives me opportunities to get more business, which means I can then put money back into the club. And then it's a connection. So everyone sort of builds together, but you can't do it without one without the other. And so the first part is to build the foundation and to create this amazing all ages, all faiths, all genders, all abilities and all disabilities, to just get everyone involved and create this really special feeling that we're all doing it together. And that's what, you know, Hawks in the Community is all about.
Yeah, I mean, the community side, that's clearly your forte. Yeah, as I said, you think out of the box as well, and it's how it can impact on real lives as well as just a project. You've obviously done the same when you were at Lewis. I think you had experience at Crystal Palace too. It's something we often touch upon here on the Non-League Football Show, but do you think too many clubs just pay lip service to their fans and to their community?
I think a lot of it's down to the fact that they don't know how to do it. Mm. It's not so much that they don't want to. I think that some of these clubs have been going as long as 100 years plus. And as I said, we've got people here that have been here 20, 30, 40 years, and they've done an incredible job to get the club to where we are. And you don't want to lose that, because that's the real soul of all football clubs. But sometimes you need to, because things are changing so fast, and technologically, you've got new websites, you've got apps, you've got all these various things. You're trying to engage with a younger audience. Sometimes some of these football clubs just don't have those people around to help them out. And we'd like to, I'm more than happy. The door's always open. Always, sort of share info and things that might not always work, but at least you can try and help other clubs to try and enhance what they're trying to do. And it is difficult, but it's just the way that the generations are beginning to change, and you've got to adapt with that. So some clubs do it brilliantly. Like Dulwich have done a fantastic job up there, and they've got themselves full houses every game, and they're doing some amazing work. And there are other clubs that do the same. It's like Lewis as well, but it's all about just trying to sort of engage the older generation to embrace the new way forward, and to try and get younger people in. We did it with I brought in an online ticketing service, and we put that on the turnstiles, and so it makes it easier for the phone generation to just buy a ticket and use a QR code to just scan it over. But that's all about teaching the old guys that are here the new ways forward. And it was a bit difficult at first, because it's all a bit technologically sort of difficult. But once they get the hang of it and they own it, then it becomes theirs, and then you can just ride with it. And so it is all about changing perceptions. But if you can do it in a fun way and make it engaging for everyone and the whole community, then it will work in the end.
Yeah, well, it's nice to hear that you're willing to share as well with the rest of the non-league community, and also nice to see that you've been recognised as well with so many of these initiatives as part of the shortlisting for the National Game Community Award at the Football Supporters Association Awards later in the year. I think you mentioned Dulwich; they're alongside you as being shortlisted. Yeah. There, people like Bath, Boston United, Dagenham and Redbridge, Stockport County, but non-league, whatever level, you can learn from that. Because, Whitehawk are very similar to my own club at Hayes and Yedding. We're never going to be the greatest supported in non-league, but there are initiatives that you can do that will bring extra people through the gate, but also bring extra people into the wider community of your football club.
Yeah, you're right. And some of the community leaders over at the Whitehawk Estate have been superb in galvanising some of those people. There's a guy who does a tour of the whole East Brighton area to show other parts of the community what the community is doing. And this community is 14,500 people within Brighton, so it's fairly big. And they have a bus and they come in, and I sit them in the main stand, and they're all local people. And the first thing I ask is how many people knew where Whitehawk was. And you get half the people, yes, the other half didn't know, or how many people have actually been here? And you only put five or six hands up, and it's because the connection's not there. So that's the real part of what we're trying to do is to just make the club theirs, and so that it generates a real feeling of empathy between the community and the club. And to do that, that ultimately gives me more commercial opportunities, because then I can go to businesses and say, look, this is what we're doing in our community. If you want to be part of it, you want to help us, and we can then get your business message out as well, then that works as well. So although community is ideal, commercially we really want to try and generate some of that revenue to make even more community projects work.
Yeah, and I guess it's important then to, when you're trying to embrace that community, bring them in, get them to games, that there's some success on the field as well. It's a fairly steady start just outside the playoffs, but with games in hand. But what about the club on the field? What are the targets there? Is it to get back up into the next level?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's difficult. We've had two relegations in 2 years, morale was always going to be sort of poor anyway. And even in the Conference South, they were getting crowds of, 300, 350, when you've got a capacity here of 2,500, 3,000. So, there's got to be some kind of movement. But on the pitch, I think that you've seen it as well within the non-league scene. You get teams that fly up the league, but their foundations are still stuck in the league that they started from. So you might have a county league side or an Isthmian South side go up three divisions, but their facilities are still in Isthmian South, and they don't build the foundations to keep it rolling all the way through. And it happened at Lewis in 2009, 2010, when they went from National back down to Roman Prem at the time. So, you've got to kind of build the foundations and let the whole club go together. But on the pitch, I think that we're holding our own. We'd like to look at playoffs and above this season. Crowds are up, and if we can do what we're doing off the pitch, and that helps the guys on the pitch, and then all well and good. But that's the plan, to stabilise and probably not go down again, but stabilise the club and then push forward. Next year is our 75th anniversary, so we'd like to celebrate it in the Isthmian Premier.
Well, I look forward to hearing about the ideas that you have for that, Kevin, because it's been fantastic talking to you and getting an insight into basically the things that make a club tick and make a club survive. Yeah, we all love going to watch our club play at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, but to get to that Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, there's so many hours behind the scenes that have people have put in. You're running all these lovely initiatives that we're talking about, which are embracing the community, but you're also having to do commercial deals to make sure that there's enough money to even buy the tea bags that run the tea bar.
yeah exactly right. And that's why on Saturday we're at home for Whitstable. I've been trying to speak to some local live bands, live groups within Brighton. I've got live music. I've been having live music here on that space. I've changed the menu. I've added vegan food, much to the annoyance of the old boys who thought that they're going to lose their chips and their burgers. We've found a local brewery and created a Lauter Ultra ale that works as well. So, all the little bits and pieces that make the experience good, certainly for the young, for the new students. And we've got 80,000 students in Brighton. We should be really targeting those and get them over to make Whitehall go on any non-league club a kind of cult club. It's only a fiver to get in, and they can have a much different experience than they would do in the Premier League. All the other things that we're trying to do is all about trying to make the club more inviting. And there aren't many clubs in the country where your fans out homophobia, we say no, racism, we say no, sexism, we say no, as part of their chanting on match day. There's a no swearing policy here. We try as best we can try to people not to swear on matches, and they don't, and it all creates a brilliant atmosphere, and that's what we're trying to do. And in fact, apart from the national award, we've also been nominated for the Sussex Sports Awards, which is coming up next Friday. And for any of those who want to have a look at the site and what we're doing, It's a public vote, and it's, the website to vote is ssa19.club. And if you look on that, you can see some of the work we've been doing within the community. And if you want to put your vote down, then you're more than welcome.
Well, Kevin, best of luck with those awards. Best of luck on Saturday, and best of luck with everything else that you're juggling and achieving down there. And no doubt we'll catch up with you again very soon before the end of the season.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much indeed.
So let's round off the show and head on over, as ever, to Non-League Paper Towers and welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Senior writer at the Non-League Paper, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, it's been a slightly quieter week for me, for sure. But as a non-league journalist, it does appear to be one of those weeks that will just keep on giving and giving. Should we start with a man who just loves to be making a headline or seven, both in non-league and in the Nationals? I'm talking, of course, about Glenn Tamplin. He left Billericay almost quietly. Some of us thought that might be the end of the Tamplin story, but as all fans of Disney films or perhaps horror films, I'll leave you guys to decide on that one. There's always one more twist in the story, and he's back. At Romford. Yeah. Romford of the Isthmian North. I think first he came in, announced he was coming in as the owner, and now the management team are departed, and he's the manager signing new players left, right and centre. He seems to be back to the old ways. Where do we start with this story?
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, time at Billericay was well documented. You have to say first and foremost that the work that has been carried out at Billericay's ground over the two or three years he was there was spectacular, really, in terms of the developments that he made. Obviously, he invested heavily into the playing squad, and they won promotion from the Isthmian League, as well as the League Cup and Essex Senior Cup. And then in Conference South, they've been close to getting another promotion, but it didn't quite happen. And obviously, that was, I feel, as a result of the sort of off-field things that have been going on as well, that were also well documented over the years, and ultimately that sort of hindered their progress, really, of the comings and goings of Harry Wheeler, the various sort of issues and things to do with Twitter and things like that, problems at games, and ultimately he decided to leave Billericay, saying he wasn't appreciative of the abuse that he received from some Billericay fans towards him, which hurt him and his family. And now, obviously, he's gone in at Romford. There were some rumours that Chelmsford were one of the clubs he was looking to take on. And I think there has been some others that he's looked at as well. But, it's interesting going to Romford, who are, at the bottom of the pyramid in terms of steps 1 to 4. They are a club that doesn't have their own ground. They're sharing. They do have planning permission to build on a new site, but with all these things, it's then getting the finance to be able to carry it out, and getting a developer to do it as well. And I think that's where Glenn Tamplin, sees where he can literally build a club up from the bottom in some ways and try and get things going there. But it is a very, very big task he's got on his hands there. Like you say, he's obviously changed the management team. He's got rid of Paul Martin, who's been there for a long time, and you do have to feel for him that, obviously he's in a sort of a blink of an eye, he's been moved on. And he says that he's signed 15 new players as well. So it'll be interesting to see who they are and how that goes. But no, it's a very big project that he's got there, and this one will be obviously one that rumbles on for a little while.
I always want to be fair to everybody. We've had Glenn on the show in the past, and he just comes across as a very likable guy. And it's just, you know, there's obviously other bits and pieces that go with it. We've both spoken to the managers, people that worked under him, and I don't think even those guys that have been sacked by him in maybe in bizarre ways over the years, they don't dislike him. They took to him as a person. And if he pulls this one off, I mean, he's even claiming that they can move from the bottom of the table to the playoffs this season. I mean, but as you say, they've got no ground. They've got the opportunity to direct. This really would be a Hollywood blockbuster film, isn't it? And we talk about this on a regular basis. This story would be great for Hollywood. But if he can turn Romford around, this really would put, well, him, non-league, everybody in the annals of history.
Well, yeah, no, I think you also have to remember that when he left Billericay, he, you know, paid me. It was all from money that he'd been putting in. There was no sort of debts there. Obviously, there was some very well-paid players there who have since moved on. And I've seen only today Sam Deering's gone to Dagenham. Moses Emmanuel has also left. And I'm sure there'll be a couple of more to that. But, you know, you have to remember that Billericay are now left with a superb ground there for the level and potentially beyond that. And also, you know, now they're just sort of balancing the books and there's no sort of, you know, money owed to people or things like that. So, you know, in a way, he's taken over Billericay and, you know, regardless of, you know, how he's gone about things and what's happened, he has left the club in a better position than he's found it.
Yeah.
And that's what he intends to do with Romford.
And I'm sure I'll try and get Glenn Tampling back on the show in the coming weeks as well, and speak to him and see what his longer term plans are there. But I mean, as if that wasn't a big enough story in non-league management this week, we spoke about Glenn Driver leaving the Braintree last week, and he's gone back to Leyton. And Braintree have this week gone for, well, it was certainly out of the blue for me, a player management appointment, but it's 23-year-old club captain Jake Hutchins.
Yeah, it's a surprise that, and obviously his sort of assistant will be the very experienced George Borg, who I must admit is a little bit sort of before my time.
I was going to say he must be before your time. I mean, for younger listeners, some of us have been involved in non-league for a very long time. If you're not aware of George, he is a true non-league character. He's certainly not a shy or retiring type, and he will bring some colour. And I'm sure we will be, you know, talking about the exploits at Braintree in the coming months for the rest of the season with George there. But it just seems a strange appointment because Jake has, I think, only joined the club this summer as well. So it's not as if he's got great in-depth knowledge. He must have really shone out to Lee Harding, the chairman at Braintree, as the sort of person that he wants to lead his football club.
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting one. Like I said, obviously his age, 23, and again, his sort of background with the club in terms of his time that he's been there. He's going to be player manager, so you do think that he will be predominantly playing, if he chooses to play himself, which obviously will leave George Borg sort of in charge as such from the sidelines. My colleague John Couch, from his time working with the local sort of Aldershot and Farmer papers, obviously knows George pretty well and spoke to him this week for a piece in Sunday's paper. So that'll be interesting, that sort of dynamic, because obviously, you know, George Borg is sort of vastly more experienced than Jerry Cutchin. So I imagine he will be having quite a sort of big say on things, really. And I think maybe that's what Braintree have sort of looked at in terms of how that dynamic will work. But it was certainly a surprise. Certainly surprised to see that one this week,
and they're still up there challenging, certainly for the playoffs this season as well. So, again, it could be another great story to be reporting on come the end of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Glenn Driver, he had a big job to do there in the summer. Really, he brought in a lot of players initially. you know, you were wondering whether it was working or not, but then they really started picking up, and, you know, a young but talented squad there. And really, I don't see any reason why this sort of change in management can't, you know, won't affect things, really. I can't see why any reason that they can't continue what they've been doing and try and push for those playoffs again.
Mm. And I guess as well, while we're mentioning managerial moves this week, we should really mention their Glenn Kendall as well. Sacked after just a single match in charge at Basildon United. I think Saturday's 6-1 thrashing at home to Hornchurch in the FA Trophy was just too much for the board. Again, non-league never ceases to amaze.
No, it's very strange one, that. It's not often that you see managers sacked after one game like that. Obviously, it's a heavy defeat there. Not how you'd want things to start, but that's a sort of bizarre decision, really, for me. I mean, you've heard sort of the stories over the years of managers sort of lasting 31 days and things like that, or even 24 hours in some sort of more bizarre cases. But it doesn't seem right at all that. You know, such a sort of quick and decision has sort of been changed, really. I don't know how you go from appointing someone and then having such a quick change of heart. So, maybe there's more to it, I don't know. But a very strange one to see.
I'm sure that there's plenty more that we'll be reporting on there in the coming weeks and months. While we're talking about bizarre situations, I guess on the playing front, we should also mention a nice coup for Jimmy Dean at Peterborough Sports, who finds out that a former Congolese international was moved into the local area. He signed they've got international clearance and signed former Newcastle United star Loa Loa.
Yeah, that's an interesting one and a good little bit of profile for non-league. Obviously, Loa Loa, like you say, known for sort of time at Newcastle and also Portsmouth. He's sort of bounced around a few clubs since then and played abroad and things like that. But 38 years old and seemingly still wanting to play. And like I say, Jerry Dean's managed to pull that one off and convince him to sign for the club. So, fair play. Let's see what that brings. I don't know whether he'll still be doing his sort of backflips and things like that and his goal celebrations that we've seen over the years. But, let's hope he does if he manages to get one this weekend.
Well, I'll let you all into a little secret. I have challenged Jimmy via text earlier on today to make sure that Loa Loa is making sure that Peterborough Sports will have a formation backflip team by the end of the season. It's not a bad shout, is it, to be mentioned in the same breath as Bobby Robson when you're a manager for signing a player of that calibre?
No, not at all. It's it'll be interesting quite to hear sort of his side of things, really, how that's come about. You do sort of get these sort of ex sort of Premier League players coming down into non-league every so often, and I'm sure that for the players at Peterborough Sports, they can definitely learn something off him of someone of that experience and things that he's achieved over his career.
Yeah, so I mean, away from all these bizarre stories, we've had what FA Cup, FA Trophy. What else can we expect in this weekend's paper?
I spoke to Kevin Betsy, who I went to meet him at Wembley, who's the England under 17s head coach. Kevin was used to play for Woking in non-league, and then got his move to Fulham, where Kevin Keegan signed him. And he played for several Football League clubs, a really good player before he returned to Woking and finished his career there. During that time, he was an academy coach at Fulham. And I think a few years ago, he sort of got the role with England as the under-15s coach and has since moved up a couple of age groups to the under-17s now. So it was interesting to hear his story. About all of that and the players that he's working with, obviously at that level internationally, you're working with some of the best, or really the best you know, young players in the country, and obviously players that the likes of Jadon Sancho, who he had at the under-15s, Callum Hudson-Odoi, those sort of players who then moved up into the senior team. So, great to hear from him. We've obviously got some FA Cup reaction from last weekend, some really good results in there for us and our non-league teams. Morden and Tiptree obviously winning at Leyton Orient was a really good result for them, and we've got some reaction to the cup draw as well. So just waited for their second round tie after receiving the bye. So we're hearing from all of those as well, and there's plenty of things in there this week, and back to usual league action this week after sort of a series of cup and trophy involved games. So it's a sort of full set 1-4 program. Hopefully the weather holds up.
Yeah, that's the weird one, is it? Because we've got obviously international football, on the back of every other weekend where I think we've had, you know, at least one cup competition to be reported on, it's nice to be focusing on the league again this weekend.
Yeah, a bit of a sort of, I can't really remember the last time we had sort of a full 1-4 programme. Like I say, obviously the cups have all been in and out over various weeks, and you know, postponed games haven't helped that either, and various sort of ineligible issues and things like that. So back to the bread and butter again this week. But just looking at the weather forecast and seeing some of the rain that we had last night, and hoping these pitches hold up.
Well, whatever happens, there'll be plenty to read about in the non-league paper on Sunday morning. So thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, David, and we'll speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, Tim.
And once again, that's it for this week. That's all we got time for. A big thank you for all of our guests for joining us. A big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in the debate throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, and Dave Anderson on at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker's at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.